My name is Kate Hansen, and I teach at Augustana College in Rock Island. I know there are two of them. I teach at that one. And I was here 5 years ago, and I did some of this. So if you were here 5 years ago, well, maybe you, like me, have forgotten it.
That's what you bring me back all the ideas. Look what you explained.
I thought that this was a good topic for this place because it's a good, since when you're usually up here, you're usually taking time out from your regular life. So this is kind of what my idea is about spiritual journaling too. And I did bring a handout that has a blank back side to it, so that way you can take notes on the back if you want. And then also I'll be talking about some of these quotations, and it always really bugs me when somebody reads a quotation and I can't keep up, and so they're there, so you don't have to frantically try to scribble if I'm talking about something. So this is not an outline by any means, but it just gives you some ideas that you can look at. And how about if, before we start though, since there are only four of you and five of us total, how about if you each start by telling us your names so that we can all get to know each other too?
I'm Laurie Fisher.
Fisher?
Fisher with a V, but it never comes out. I don't know, it's not heard that way.
Marjorie Dickinson. Susan Jeffrey.
Renita Falkenstein.
All right, good. Hopefully you're, some of you probably already a spiritual journal, so usually what ends up is I'm teaching to the choir, preaching to the choir. But I thought today I'd talk a little bit about why and what and how to journal really well to get the most out of it. And I put this Chinese proverb on the board because I really think this is, I teach writing, one of the things I do is teach writing. And I think it's relevant to this class particularly because I think that when we talk about things or when we hear them or see them, we are sensory beings and we do respond to the world in lots of ways. But I think by writing is when we really come to understand things the best. And so I really like this, hearing I forget. And since I have children, I can verify that that is true. Hi, Janice, come on. And seeing, I remember, and I think more and more, actually, we are a visual society. I noticed that I also teach teachers how to teach, and more and more we have to deal with those kinds of kids who really just learn by seeing. But I really think that writing is how we understand things. So we're going to be talking about that. Most people, or lots of people, have negative associations with writing, possibly because of school. either you've had experiences with the red pen slashing through your writing, or people, you know, like if I go to parties and they find out I teach English, they always start saying, oh, I have to watch my grammar, you know. And so they're worried about it if they can't spell something or if their grammar isn't good. I've actually had students tell me they have nothing to say, which I just don't believe it, or that there isn't any time, which I totally believe. That's the hardest part usually. But journal writing is a lot like having a really good conversation with a really good friend and someone that you trust. And I think because of that, it really allows us to understand ourselves better, and that's a really important part of being a spiritual being. So the nice thing about writing is it helps us focus. We go through our days and there's so much clutter, you know. All you have to do is get your mail and start going through all of that, and you realize that you know, your life is just filled up with, as my mom always called it, adiaphora, just, you know, just stuff all day long. And so the nice thing about writing in a journal is it can help you sort of sift through all that and find a focus and clarify what you're thinking and feeling. So I like to compare it to a glass of water that into which you have put a spoonful of dirt. And if you stir it up, and it's kind of muddy and cloudy, but if you let it settle, then usually the water is clear and the mud sinks to the bottom. And I think that's what writing does for us. It helps us let that all settle and have some clarity. But writing is also generative. So by that I mean that when we write, we come to more ideas. And so that's one of the reasons why I think it's extremely important, because we can be weeding or mowing the lawn, or you can tell I was on Lawn and Gardens last week. That's like in my head. And we can be thinking thoughts, but when we put them into words, that's when the thoughts begin to find a focus and move forward to other thoughts. So it is generative, and one idea leads to another, and so taking that time to write in words does lead to ideas that you didn't know you had. The old saying that, how do I know what I think until I see what I say? That's exactly right. As we are told, if we have a task, a writing task, you know, we're supposed to write a prayer for church, immediately we think, what am I going to write? But as we read a bit and reflect a bit, we come to some ideas, but it's as we're writing that the ideas really come clear. So I think that's another great thing about journaling. Another thing is that it gives us an opportunity to reflect on our lives in faith. And with our busy lives, most of us don't take that time very often, and it's very important, especially for growth, for change. And there are plenty of people out there historically who have set the path for us with spiritual journaling and have shown us how important it is. St. Augustine knew it was important and spent an awful lot of time journaling as a dialogue with God. And that is just one example of the people who have done that. Journal writers for centuries have known that writing changes us. And it helps us put on a different pair of glasses, so to speak, a different way of looking at our lives. And I really think that writing and faith fit together really well. And that is because both require that we be purposeful and conscious about what we're doing, and that we invest time in it, or in order to get anything. I think both require that we pay attention, careful attention, and both require that we think and reflect and consider. And then both, I think, faith and writing are just plain old hard work, and so they are very similar. But if you think of anything that's been important in your life, you probably have put work and time into those things, and so you know that those that work is worth it. You know, a good marriage or any kind of good relationship takes work, and this is not unlike that. I was thinking about all the loaves of bread they've been baking. You know, even a good meal takes a lot of work. This new one of the college kids who is starting out a new life said he got a 30-minute meal cookbook, and he was saying, and you know, that thing lied. It takes way longer than 30 minutes to make a good meal. I was like, welcome to the world. But, you know, it's all true. It takes time and work. This one is on your handout. But Ralph Waldo Emerson once said, look sharply after your thoughts. They come unlooked for, like a new bird seen on your trees. And if you turn to your usual task, disappear. And I think that's a very important thing to consider, that we get ideas, we think about things, and if we don't take the time to write them down and think about them further, they flit away. I always tell my writing students, the good ideas are really fast, and the bad ideas sit around forever. So, you know, we really have to pay close and careful attention to when we are gifted with some spiritual thinking. So I think that journaling can help us look sharply, as Emerson would like us to, at our thoughts. And I think if we do not write, that we might miss out on some really important connections or understandings, and that we might forget things. And I think worse than that is we would lose an opportunity for some kind of deeper understanding about God's presence in our lives. And that would be sad. So by taking time and then being purposeful and deliberate and receptive to God, I think we will find that we can grow in love for God and we gain insights. And there's something about the way that spending time thinking about ideas transforms those ideas, and then we too are transformed. And it's slow and subtle with writing particularly. You know, when I teach at Augustana, the classes are 10 weeks long, and trying to teach writing in 10 weeks is just a joke. But, you know, I always tell the students, well, you know, this is a little taste, and maybe in a couple of years, if you keep at it, someday you'll think, oh, now I get it. But, it, you know, it does take time, but it does actually happen if we work at it. Now, of course, I've used the word time a whole bunch of times, and looking around this room, I'm pretty sure that all of you are very busy people, and that time is a huge issue. You know, who has time? And also, most of us do not need more shoulds in our lives. You know, we just have enough of that kind of guilty feeling like we should be dusting or we should be... by the way, I'm not into dusting at all. Or we, you know, should be exercising every day. We should be doing all these things that are good for us. So that's hard. But if we can try to view journaling as a gift to yourself and also to God, I think then maybe you can give yourself that time. The editor of the Lutheran in August 2000, David Miller, wrote a really excellent article called Holy Leisure, and I don't know if any of you read that. And I'm just going to read you an excerpt because I just thought he really nailed it, this idea of taking time. He says, what we really need is holy leisure. Holy leisure is an open space in our lives and schedules where we listen to the deep voices in our hearts. It's time to broaden our vision and enlarge our hearts. Holy leisure makes us mindful of where we are going and why. Holy leisure allows us to experience the difference between knowing about God and truly knowing God. And I think that's one of the great things about doing some journaling with a very specific focus on your spiritual and faith life, is that it gives you that opportunity for holy leisure, a little time for you to think about how God is present in our lives, because we just get too busy and we forget to pay attention. And I think a lot of seeing miracles in the world is just having your eyes open to seeing them and being aware of that. Now, here we are at Holden, and we're all away from our other lives and our obligations, and we're very unplugged up here, but I think we can also take time and unplug back home in a slightly different way, but by using journaling. And then there's another quote on here that I like. It's by Willa Cather. In the middle of the page, miracles seem to rest not so much upon faces or voices or healing power coming suddenly near us from far off, I should say, but upon our perceptions being made finer, so that for a moment our eyes can see and our ears can hear that which is around us always. So that's what I'm getting at with this idea that if we are aware and we make time for God, that there will be some renewal and change and growth. Now, of course, that's all well and good. But there is actually, there have been some studies about journaling that have shown that it actually makes us physically well also. And so I thought I'd talk just for a few minutes about some of that because I think it's intriguing. We had a professor, James Pennebaker, came to Augustana a few years back, and he wrote this book called Opening Up, The Healing Power of Expressing Emotions. I'll pass that around. I think I wrote that title in your handout. And he's been doing some really exciting research on writing and healing. And it just blows my mind. Of course, here I'm a writing teacher, and of course I think it's a good idea. but then to find that they can actually sort of prove that writing is a healthy thing to do, I just find that really compelling. So there are many, many studies that talk about, like, oh no, now what do I get in? I'm going to have to rappel up the side of the there have been many studies that show that even the smallest amount of reflective journaling, because lest you think I'm talking about an hour a day or something, which I don't do, okay? I'll just confess that right now. They found that even just 5 minutes at one time could make a measurable difference in people's physical and mental health. 5 minutes. I think we can all give ourselves 5 minutes, hopefully. They did a couple different studies. One involved first-year students, and the students just came in and wrote on the stress of separation and moving. And then they had a control group who did not. And the students who just wrote about their feelings, their grades improved over the other kids. They also had two groups of students come in, and one group just wrote about superficial topics, you know, like the weather and food that day and things like that. The second group wrote about spiritual feelings and issues and emotions, and the second group had 50% fewer visits to the health center during that time period, and they only wrote 15 minutes a day, 4 days a week. And they actually had a measurable boost in their immune systems. And so they actually stayed stronger longer after the study was over. So I think that's an interesting mind-body connection. So if you aren't convinced of the other benefits, hopefully you'll think that's compelling.
Can I interrupt and ask a question? Was it specifically the writing, or was it the reflective time that was? Did they try to parse that out?
Yeah, they did. Because they also had some studies where the kids just came in and, it has to do with words. Because they had some students come in and talk into a tape recorder, and that was also effective. Mm-hmm. So I think that talks a lot to us about how important our friends are and to be talking with people and not be cut off. Mm-hmm. They also found that praying worked as well as writing. Because again, you're putting it into words to someone. but that something like dance didn't work because it was nonverbal. So there is, it's got to be words, and it's really important.
And is there any significant difference between physically writing or keyboarding?
Yeah, I mean, I always find that interesting. I don't know if he's actually, I know he continues to study, and I don't know if he's broken it down that much. Have you noticed the difference?
I find that longhand is much, for some reason, that gets to a deeper place for me. I can do it on the keyboard, I think the more I'm doing it, but it just seems like there's something about the physical writing that makes a difference for me.
Yeah. Lots of poets say that they cannot do the first draft on a computer, that they have to have that hand, that physical movement. They like to hear the scratchy of their pen, you know. And a lot of writers handwrite a first draft, and then they clean it up on a computer. Personally, I like handwriting a journal because it's portable, you know, and I don't like to feel like, oh, I have to be sitting at my desk, at a computer, and then it's less likely to happen,
yeah.
Frankly. You know, if you have your little journal with you and you have 5 minutes waiting for Joey to get up from soccer practice, you know, then you can do that instead of having to make a special time. But I agree with that.
I'm curious about the phenomenon of blogging.
Yeah.
Very personal ideas and put out there for the whole world. And you know, I'm used to having the diary with the lock.
It's mystifying, isn't it?
And then they seem surprised when somebody reads them and they get nailed for it.
True.
So I don't know. I haven't got a clue, but I said, I wonder what's this all about? Except I have some sense that wanting connectedness and sharing and not getting it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't read blogs either, so I don't know if they're just trivial. Went to the grocery store, you know. The ones you hear about in the paper seem to be more deeply felt. Like, you know, I'm going to take this gun to school and kill somebody, and, you know, they're reading these after the fact. But it doesn't make me wonder what's compelling people to want to share.
Well, I think that's exactly it. There is something compelling people to want to share. And many of us probably had diaries as kids, and this is maybe the modern.
However, my real experience is on the other end, people who are completely isolated from society. And I'm talking about people in maximum security prisons. And this I correspond with them. Now, I'm more involved with policy decisions than the internal writing stuff. But these people, they have no verbal contact with anybody. The guards are trained not to talk to them. The guards only come by to stuff their meals in the door, but they will not answer them. They're deprived of magazines, books, etc. They're really literally stuck in these cells. And so when you talked about the healing, the ones that write to me are vulnerable enough to write. There's others that they get 4 or 5 sentences on a page, that's a long thing for them. But anyways, I'll be listening to you with this in the back of my mind, as how this might apply to the socially isolated.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
How does this correspond to expressing through pictures, drawing?
Yeah, he is continuing to study also the because that's another language, right? But it's, not verbal. And but yet we know that when there's so many studies with people who don't have language, small children, and how much they can express through drawing.
In juvenile detention centers, they seem to draw a lot. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if that's the alternative, you know, to the written language, since they may not possess the words or have never felt that they could express that way.
Yeah. And of course there's the whole field of art therapy and how to use that. Mm-hmm. Some friends are art therapists, and they definitely believe you can tap into other ideas and feelings through that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know children are traumatized. Of course, they have them draw pictures of things that have happened, because they don't have the words.
Yeah, and I would think that I think that drawing in journals is very useful too. You know, if you feel like you're not an artist and that no one's ever going to see it, then that's a good safe place to draw stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I brought some of my journals, and there's everything in there. And I just think that it should be a wide open place for you to experiment with whatever. But I just thought that some of these studies had some interesting relevance to the reasons behind why we might want to consider journaling more purposefully. They found too that students,
hi.
That that other studies have found that you can lower your blood pressure by writing. People who have sleep issues can find relief through writing. There was even one study I read that talked about people who write have more working memory because of it. So I just think, you know, goodness, with all that good coming out of it, I think we better get over our dislike for writing and jump right in there. A lot of studies have shown too that the way we write, the kinds of language we use, can really change how we think. And so I wanted to talk for a minute about that because I think that's pretty interesting stuff. One of the studies talked about how the most beneficial kind of writing, the most healing kind of writing, is when we construct stories or narratives. So reflecting on our lives, what's happening to us, and putting that into a story is a really healthy thing to do. It helps us make meaning. And so using words like because and realize and meaning helps us get to insights, which I think is kind of interesting. They also found in one study that using positive words to describe negative feelings helps us feel better. So for example, instead of saying, I'm not happy, it's better to say, I'm feeling sad. Instead of flipping it to a not something. And that just helps us move beyond negative feelings more readily. And you just think, oh yeah, how could that work? But this was a long-term study over 5 years with lots of people. They also said in that study that using complex connections, like talking about something and talking about accept this or not that or but this, helps us get to clearer, more refined ideas. So if we can purposefully do that sometimes, push ourselves to think about, yes, this is how I'm feeling, but what else? That can get us to a deeper place also. So I think all of that was very important or interesting stuff. And obviously using language is important. Making devotional time is important. There was an article in the Lutheran called Holy Christian. I don't know if any of you saw that. That was, what year was that? That was in 98. And in it, it talked about some things that we can do in our lives to sort of help us remove ourselves from modern life sometimes. We just get so caught up in it. And it talked about things like going to worship, and being part of a congregation is very useful. But it also talked about taking personal devotional time and reading and writing about our faith lives. So I think it is a huge benefit. There's a list at the bottom of this page of all the benefits I could think of that would come from spiritual journaling, and I think we can probably think of even more, but I think there are just so many ways that we can use that place where we have one place to put problems we're thinking through or decisions or feelings or spiritual goals, all of those kinds of things.
You haven't got anything about history over time.
Say that again?
You haven't got anything about history over time. In my 60s now, I keep wishing, I'd written down in my 20s. Because I remember that I had a very active life and things going. And then, of course, intergenerational. Of course, all the thoughts that just were in my 20s, they aren't there anymore. And nobody in the future is going to know that I had all these beautiful thoughts.
That's right. And that is the wonderful thing about it. You have a record. Now, I have journals from way back when I was a kid, and now my kids are those ages. And one day I was thinking about those kids, and the teachers I teach are going to teach middle schoolers and high schoolers, and so very much focused on what are those kids like now. And so I went back to some of my journals from junior high, and I was looking at them, and I thought, Oh my goodness. I was just vapid, you know. Yeah, and it's just like rambling about this boy and that outfit and these stupid things, you know. And I sometimes my students get frustrated with their students, and I get frustrated with my children that, you know, do they ever think about anything important? And then I look back at that and I thought, that's how it is, you know. What did I expect? I was the same. And yet we forget that because we moved on to another place. And so
my disappointment is adults that are still on that level.
Yeah, I love adults. Hopefully I will be on that.
The other thing that I think of is, and maybe this is all implied, is it's a place of expression that might counteract loneliness.
Yeah.
It may be for some people the most honest place they can be. And in the sense that it's an experience, it's a dialogue with God, it's more than what most of us have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even if we have a close-knit family, or we have a spouse or a partner we're close to, there are still things we don't tell other humans, you know? And so this is a place. Now, that said, that leads me to another thing. And that is that people often say, yeah, but if I put it in writing, what if it falls into the wrong hands? Like the old diary with the black on it. And, you know, I always joke that I'm going to put it in my will that I want my journals burned when I die or buried with me, because I really don't want my kids reading about my college years.
They can write about their own.
Yeah, there aren't Teresa's in it anymore. And yet I don't want to destroy them yet because they're still valuable to me. And so there is always that risk that if it comes out of your head and goes onto the page, that somebody could read it. So that is something to think about. And you would like it to be a risk-free place, but then you're going to want to keep it safe, so that it is that kind of place for you.
When I read about this bar, some such place where they each had computer things, and so this person here in the same room was talking to this lady over here, but instead of going over and talking, they're doing their pictures, whatever it is.
I know, it's sad, and I would laugh at that, except my husband and I do that. But not in the same house. Yeah, we're at work, he's on the third floor, and I'm on the first floor, and in an old little building. And so if I don't feel like trekking up all the stairs to go ask him if he's going to lunch, I'll just email him.
This is a place that's supposed to be, you know, for young people to get together and find prospective mates and whatnot.
That's pretty funny. You know, I'm curious about that, that the writing down, you know, things that are written down and other people having access to our innermost intimate thoughts in some way. And I do wonder, to some extent, whether or not it's, do we really want to share those inner thoughts with other people? And we just, it's hard to do it face to face, but if somebody were to discover that, and I mean, I think, you know, we all fear that somebody will read our journal, but at the same time, we also, we do put it down on paper, and maybe that is a safer way to be intimate with people who we might otherwise not feel comfortable being as intimate with. And I'm wondering if that's, I mean, you haven't destroyed your journals, and you're... Children could find them, and...
Yeah. And maybe they've read them.
Yeah. But, and to some...
Mom, don't tell me I can't do that.
I know
you do.
But I think it humanizes you to your kids in a way that you can't possibly humanize yourself as... I mean, you maintain a certain relationship with them out of necessity in terms of how you've actually related to them, but perhaps it's... It does provide you an opportunity to share with them a part of you that you can't really in other ways. I mean, to me, that's what writing, what's wonderful about writing is that you can share that intimate part of yourself that's very difficult to just sit and say to somebody, this is what I think, but you can write it down.
Oh,
they
can
find it.
But there are lots of historical relationships that are based on letters, and which are kind of journaling back and mm-hmm. forth to each other because they can't be in the same place or because that works for them. Richard Nixon used to communicate with his family through notes. Now, he wasn't a healthy man. But yeah, you know, he would leave notes on his daughter's pillow rather than talk with her mm-hmm. about some things if they were too hard mm-hmm. to talk about.
Well, first you gotta catch him.
Yeah.
I said at the high school today, you have to make an appointment 4 days ahead of time if I want 5 minutes with
him.
Yeah. I have a friend who has journaled a lot because has trouble expressing feelings and was raised and it's, you know, deep-seated and all that. And later in a conversation, he will go back and say, well, I wrote something in my journal that says it, and he still can't remember to say it, but we'll read from the journal.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still not for the discovery method. I would prefer to, either if I have something that, you know, I thought about this, and I just put it in these words and I want to say it to you. Let me go get it and I'll read it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that he has mm-hmm. done that with personal thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So then he gets to select.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What he's going to do. And that really kind of decompresses. It's sort of already said. And then you're almost, it's kind of repeating it.
Well,
in a
it's an affirming thing.
Yeah.
And if you can take the time to write it, you can say it the way you really want to say it, you know, because sometimes things don't come out. You know, you've had a conversation, and then later on you think, oh, I should have said this, you know. And it's quite clear how exactly what you want to express, and if you can write it first and then share it for some people.
That's maybe fun. That's why suicide notes are so often so clear. Because somebody sat with it, and wouldn't say it, but needed to have it heard to answer questions of the people they left behind, or for whatever therapeutic reason it was for them, but they left it the way they wanted it to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote and rewrote and scratched out.
The other advantage of writing is that the other person isn't challenging your ideas. You get to express yourself all the way from beginning to end without having your thoughts challenged. And that's not to say that there isn't some benefit always to the challenge, but it is a different type of a process than a conversation.
Here, I thought this through. Read it. I'll talk to you later.
Well, and you get to sustain a train of thought and see where it takes you. And when you're having a great conversation, there's some play with that. It's like a tennis match, you know. You have an idea, and then they toss an idea, and that makes you think of an idea, and it moves in an interesting direction. But when you're alone with your thoughts, it moves in a different direction because you're staying on the same path. So it has a difference,
mm-hmm.
a different quality to
mm-hmm.
it.
I have kind of a funny story. What you said about. Yeah, looking back on it, it's funny. It's so transparent. But when I was in college, I had a study carol in the library, and I would leave books there that I was, you know, it was like I reserved the space. And I left my journal there. And I really had some personal stuff, but didn't have anyone to express it to. And one day I came, and someone had read my journal and written me a note at the end. Fortunately, it was a very affirming note. And, you know, I just think, I've looked at it since then and thought, why would I have left? But I think that was why. I think I really needed to connect. And thank goodness,
someone
fell into the right hands.
Yeah.
So I think there's some, for me anyway, there's a lot of truth to that.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to talk just a couple minutes about how there aren't rules about journaling, but some ideas to think about for doing it and having it work really well. One of the things you gotta do though is get a journal. and they can look like anything. You know, this is a, you know, I don't know, I think it costs 40 cents, little journal that I usually have this size tucked with me all the time just because then there's something along, but it's not taking up space. So it could be something as cheap and goofy looking as that. When I travel, I always do a journal, and then I like to decorate it. So when I went to Egypt with my mother and my sister, I had this little journal with me all the time. And then when I came back, I put one of my favorite pictures on it. Then it's mine, you know, you can own it. So even though there are beautiful journals in the Holden gift bookstore area that I am coveting, I mean, I have to buy one accordingly. I also like the idea of taking a very plain journal and making it yours somehow and really, you know, creating your own journal. And then I also, those all have lines. I would encourage you to at some point have a journal that has no lines. And the joy of that is that you will find that you do sketch, this is a little metaphor I was writing out for myself, you will sketch things, you can do all kinds of bizarre things in there. You can write big when you're upset about something. You can write not upright, you can write in a circle if you feel like you're going in circles. And so it just makes it easier to think outside the box, you know, to be more creative with it. And so I really like those sort of sketch journals that have no lines. That's another possibility. And then you'll notice I have Post-it notes. This one's this one's a beloved journal. And that is because I would like to suggest to you that after you've done some journaling for a while, that you go back and reread what you've written. And it's advantageous at various points in the process to do it on a regular basis, or to do it whenever you fill one. You know, there are all kinds of ways to go about it. But to not just view the journal as a place to sort of dump and run, but to actually go back and forage through it, sift, again, the garden metaphor, garden, lawn and gardens, sift through that
compost.
and get off the twigs and stuff, but see what is rich in there, because you can learn from that again, and by revisiting it. You can also find things that you would like to reflect on further and sort of mark them and then take them into your next journal or onto a new page and see what you're thinking now. So you can really keep living off of the ideas beyond the first time that you wrote them. And I think that's a very useful thing to do. There is a book by Ronald Klug, and I don't know if it's from Oxford, but I don't know if I did write and send it in, and I did see it on the shelf, so I don't know if there's trouble getting a hold of this book now or not. But it's a very handy book, How to Keep a Spiritual Journal, and it's just straightforward stuff. He's just got all kinds of good ideas. But one of the things I really like about it is in chapter 12, he talks about harvesting your journal. That's how he calls it. And he suggests, you know, you can do it at the end of a week or a month or a year, or he likes to do it on his birthday because he kind of sits and reflects on his whole year. Or I usually do it at the end of a volume whenever I fill a book. And then he's got this little set of ways of indexing his ideas. Now, I don't go this far, but you really could if you're really trying to cull every good thing out of it. He puts an I next to things that are insights about himself or his life. He puts a Q next to something that is a quotation, because I like to also bring in things from the outside to the journal, so favorite quotes and so on. He puts an S next to struggles that he's continuing to work on. A W next to writing ideas, because he's also an author. A C for clue, and he says that's something that is worth further thought. And then he puts a TD next to things he needs to do, things that he realizes he needs to take action on, and so on. So, I mean, there is a way that you could come up with a system for marking and noting and gleaning more from it. And I like that idea. I think it's kind of useful. You need to, my favorite verse for thinking about journaling is Psalm 46, verse 10. And that is, be still and know that I am God. I'm kind of, Anna and Mark know me from Quad Cities. I'm kind of an energy person, so I go, go, go all the time. And so I think this is like my mantra to remember to be still once in a while, that there's no other way to go about it if you're going to give yourself time to reflect and have time for God. So I think that's an important thing to do. Have a comfortable place, some deep breaths, maybe drink tea, daydream a little bit, read something to get you going if you're feeling sort of empty, praying, and then just pick up your pen. I also have a favorite pen. and you can do so many things. You could give yourself a time limit or a page limit, but mostly you just have to keep your pen moving so that you keep the ideas flowing. That's one of the things that we tend to, because we've had all those critics in our lives, they're sort of floating over our heads still, you know. Oh, don't write that, or we're worried about somebody seeing it. And so we have to just keep plugging along and make ourselves keep writing.
I still find it horribly intimidating to have a blank page. It's so clean.
Yeah. And you know, some writers, to overcome that, will never stop at the end of a page, they stop mid. So then when you come back to it, oh look, I'm half written already. No, I can start from here. So that you can overcome that. Or use a colored page journal so that at least it's not a white blank page. Looks a little nicer. And I think you should remember the following rules for journaling, and that is always put a date on your entry. And the other rule is don't make any other rules. Because I think it should go where it's going to go. But I think it's, as you were talking about the history, not having a history, I think looking back at dates can really help you understand why you were thinking that or why you were feeling that at the time, and make the connections. So I do like the idea of keeping a date. And oh, I brought this picture. Do you remember highlights pictures from the old highlights magazines? Yeah. This is what I think about when I'm rereading my journal. I view my journal as one of these hidden pictures where, you know, on the surface, it looks like some bears out in the woods celebrating Valentine's Day. Who knows why? But, you know, if we look at the pictures we're supposed to find, there are all kinds of things hidden in there. And so that's my visual aid for thinking about your journal as one of those hidden pictures. And it's important to write the first time for all kinds of reasons that we've talked about. But then it's also important to go back and search and learn more as well. Because I really think that God will be in your journal and in your lives, and you're going to want to be able to start to see the patterns that are in there, which you won't notice because you're living your life and you're doing all your daily tasks. And when you go back and reread, you'll see those things. They'll become more evident. And you'll also see change, which most of us, again, change comes so incrementally that we don't think we've changed. And we have. And our thinking changes and our feelings change. And it's nice to have a place to note that and to actually see that can help us really feel or really understand it better. And so I think that journaling is a process, partly because you just have to have that mindset. And then, of course, you get this product. So it's twofold benefit, and it's just a wonderful way to enrich or strengthen your spiritual life. Alice Walker. Have you read any Alice Walker before? She wrote Color Purple and all kinds of beautiful poetry. And she once said in an interview that writing is a state of grace. Mm-hmm. And as a Lutheran, I love the grace word. But that just really struck me that it does sort of put you in a state of grace. And if you are also having your journal have a specific purpose of being a spiritual journal, because there are all kinds of journals. You know, I have a cooking journal. I have travel journals. There are all kinds of journals. But if you have one that's specifically for your spiritual life, I think it can put you in a place of grace. And that's a pretty wonderful place. So I thought I would give you a handout of some 31 ideas to get you started. That's a whole month's worth. For some of us who don't journal every day, that's more than a month's worth. and then see what other things you want to say or ask about, or just generally. And then I had this crazy idea that we could start a Holden journal. I did this 5 years ago when I was up here too, and it was really fun. So I brought along a journal, and I'm gonna, it's because it's gonna be outside on the kiosk. I put it in a Ziploc, and I was gonna, I'm gonna tap it, tag it, or
catch it.
Thank you, that word. Yeah, I'm an English teacher. On the kiosk. On the kiosk.
There are
somewhere.
So many choices of words you could have used. That's why it was hard to use.
And I'll put it on the kiosk, and then it'd be just for everyone. And I'm going to ask if they announce it to the podium sometime. So that people can just put whatever they like in it, and it will sort of take on a life of its own. It did last time anyway, and it was really interesting.
In our room, there's a Holden journal.
Yeah, there's one in each of the cellies.
I don't remember that from before. So I don't know how long it's been going.
I don't know. That would be good to ask. Did I give everyone one, or did I get distracted? Okay. So I just have some ideas for getting you started. Of course, you can ignore all of them. I always tell that in all my writing classes, you can ignore me, do whatever. But this is just 31 sort of jumping off points. And I think, like for example, number 3, C.S. Lewis wrote Letters to God, you know, a whole book full. So some of these could just take you for a long, long time if you really, really like them. And some of them you could just take the idea of it and then just make it yours. For example, number 12, I've just given you a little line of poetry that I think would be interesting to reflect on. But of course, you could read some Anne Weems poetry every day and reflect on those forever and ever too. So these are just some ways to get started. Then as I was looking through my files, I found that I had yet a second list of ideas, and I decided, you know what? If I get enough people, I'm gonna give them two. So extra benefit, you get 2 months worth of journal ideas. And this is also two-sided 31 ideas. And these are just some things that one time I started jotting down of things that I was thinking about and things I had read in other places. And so hopefully that will give you some places to start. Because as one of you mentioned with the blank page thing, you know, sometimes you think, well, I would really like to journal more often, and I think it's a good idea, and that just sitting down and starting is such a problem. So that's my little gift, is that now we have no excuses. You get a journal and you got 62 ideas that should get you started. Now, I would assume, though, that all of you have experiences with journaling, have done some. Are there some helpful hints that we could share with one another about what works or what doesn't work?
Well, I don't journal regularly, and I do get stumped. I've been disappointed whenever I sit down and what I write seems so shallow. So I really appreciate this. I think this will help. But I do remember a period of journaling where I just did stream of consciousness writing. I made a commitment to write for 20 minutes, and I just kept writing, and in time, that was really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Just somehow the sheer bolt.
Yes, yes.
Know, not, and I guess it got rid of some of the critical voice, because I just knew I was going to write.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's called free writing, and a writing teacher called Peter Elbow, which is just like it sounds. Sort of talks of, he has a whole book where he talks about the benefits of free writing, and one of, there are multiple benefits, and one of them is it does sort of loose the dam, you know, and it gets you going, and if you can allow it to be free, it actually improves your writing fluency, it helps you get started more readily after time, it helps you get past the critics, does all kinds of good things. So you're just naturally doing that.
Well, I did it. I haven't done it in a while.
That's good.
There was an interesting scene in Franz Forrester where the young writer who's being mentored by the older writer is given a passage from one of the older writer's books and is just to continue from the page that where it ends. And I've never tried that myself, but that's always intrigued me as a way to launch into writing. And I don't know if that's, I mean, it's not really, it's a little more difficult, I suppose, in a journaling context to do something like that, although I guess you could just note this is the appendage to some other page somewhere. But there is something kind of about that that kind of might help break that white page syndrome down a little bit and give you something that's not white to start with.
Yeah, and you get to sort of finish a thought, somebody else's thought, which is interesting.
I found that in my prayer life, the list never gets shorter. And so, even though some go off, there was more to replace. I have a prayer journal and date the entry, and just some it's continuing, some it's new stuff, and so that I don't forget, sometimes it's just, and all those prayers in my prayer journal, rather than, you know, try to recall them, or if, I don't know, to fall asleep or something. But anyway, to record those, and then sometimes when I go back and look at something, it reminds me maybe to send a card to somebody, or to give them a call, or check to see how they're doing, or whatever. But so anyway, it's just a prayer journal, which happens to be just a little yellow, blue light, an illegal pad kind of thing, with a personal picture in the front.
Well, I think the lovely thing about that, too, is I think sometimes we can get frustrated and we can feel like our prayers aren't heard or they're not being responded to, and I think it kind of comes back to that idea of Emerson's about, you know, paying attention and noticing, and what Cather says about miracles and seeing. And that sometimes if we go back and look at our prayers and then we think about it, we realize that our prayers were answered. But we sometimes forget what we prayed. and we just have to keep paying attention.
Maybe we got an answer that we didn't.
That is your answer now.
Tell me that you didn't get an answer.
I was thinking that it's so true about miracles and things being there, but we just don't see, we just don't hear. We have had a cabin in the mountains for about 25 years, and I'm retired now, but initially we'd go up on weekends and, okay, rush to do this, rush to do that as far as finishing, or you're so busy unwinding and you don't have enough time, because we built this from, you know, nothing. And then after I retired, I not only noticed the birds that were there, I mean, I saw them before, but I started noticing bird behavior. And they were still behaving before, the same way, but I never saw it. And I never saw how different animals interact with each other, like the squirrels and the birds, and which ones like to feed at which times of the day, which ones are ground feeders, and all this kind of stuff, which of course was going on, but I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. And then when I was retired and we got to be there other than weekends, I could see and I could hear things that I didn't before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all going on around us. It's at the tuning.
Yeah.
Well, I think our time is up. And who's served lunch at noon? All right.